is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, transform your training this April with our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Get $1,500 off any new machine in the month of April. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdish.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hey, this is Brendan Winters from Pro Skills Basketball, and you are listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram. And be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Linsing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. Tonight, we are back for our second NBA pod of the week to talk about the first set of play-in games, look ahead to what's going to happen on Friday, and share our all-NBA teams. We may even get into some early playoff talk and talk about those series, but we'll see how we are going here as we get to the end. So, Jay, we are going to start
Sadly, it's not Tuesday night with the emergency pod, Mike.
Yeah, we were hoping that was going to happen, but not meant to be. It could have been.
It was getting close to it again. So the first game, obviously, the Cavaliers in Brooklyn. Listen, when you give up 40 points in the first quarter, it's not a recipe for success. And I will say this, though. They did do a really good job of the second quarter. For the first 10 minutes and I think it was 10 minutes and 38 seconds where they held them to 8 points. That last 1 minute and 22 seconds didn't go very well, though. I think they gave up more points in that minute 22 than they had the first 10 and a half. The Cavs fought back. I mean, Garland is a star, man. He's a star. I know you and I have been texting about it. He was a star last night. Mobley looked good. Just don't dribble the ball right now, Mobley. That's the only thing I don't want you to do. I thought Kevin Love and Rondo, they looked like they had played in a bunch of playoff games before. And obviously, they stood out. And I thought they played really well, both of them. I thought Rondo made a few, like that one driving layup he took was not necessarily a good layup. But you could just tell that he had been in this situation before whereas the rest of the team looked like they hadn't been in this situation before. Garland looked like he'd played in an NBA Finals last night. Like, I thought, I was really impressed by his poise, and he hung together pretty well. And the only other thing I would say is, I don't know what to do about Caris LeVert, but
I'm out, baby. I'm out. I'm out.
It was bad.
I'm out. I'm
it
out.
Was bad. It was bad. I'm it out. Was bad last night. It was bad.
Bring me back, bring me back Colin Sexton.
Yeah, well, we got LeVert up for another year, no matter what, right? So, because he's under contract, unless we
could
can
be on
trade
a trading, it could be on the trading block again.
I mean, it was bad. I mean, it was really bad. And Markkanen didn't play great, but I don't think he was as bad as it. Like, he played bad in the first half. I thought he played pretty well in the second half, but he missed there was one three he missed that I think would have been a huge one. But as we said, Mike, the Cavs played terrible, and the game was there for them. Like, they could have won that game last night if some things fell the right way in the last 6 minutes. Once again, they were down five. Was five the smallest it got? I think it was five or six. But they had a chance. They had a legitimate chance last night if they would have just closed it out.
There were definitely multiple opportunities in the fourth quarter where if another shot goes down, you get a defensive rebound at a key moment. It felt like when they had that chance to cut it down under six or under five, felt like we probably had three or four possessions where we got good looks at it. I know that the TNT guys were talking a lot about the fact that the Cavs got great shots. And you think about Okoro missed, what, three wide open corner threes, maybe even more than that. And we already talked about LeVert. Markkanen was average. I think the problem with Markkanen is what you're paying him, and could you find a replacement level guy at that price? We talked about it when they acquired Markkanen, that you just don't get a guy with that size and that kind of skill level and talent to come to Cleveland very often. So I guess it's a chance you got to take. He still leaves me wanting in a lot of areas, but he's had some good moments this year, but he was not good last night. And LeVert, the more you watch him, the more I just see him dribble, 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 and maybe...
And not even control the dribbles.
Right. And maybe I throw a pass at the last minute if I can't get a shot off. And it always just seems like he just doesn't attack the rim. Everything's a floater, or he's fading away, or he just doesn't explode to the basket. I don't know. What I saw from him last night, I didn't really enjoy the Caris LeVert experience in that game. So maybe he'll come back and be better, but I didn't enjoy what I saw the other night. And as you said, Garland was really good. He missed a shot or two on one of those possessions. I think he had a turnover too on one of those possessions where we could have cut it down under five or three. But obviously without him, there's no chance of this offense functioning in any way, shape, or form. He's the only guy that can meaningfully create anything for anybody else. And so I texted you in the middle of the game. I said, I'm out on LeVert. I'm out on Markkanen. I'm out on Okoro. Okoro has got to be able to shoot better, and he's got to be able to contribute something offensively.
He's played well this year. I'm not out on Okoro yet. Come on now. That's a little jump in the gun. He had one bad he's been playing really well.
He was the fifth pick in the draft.
Mike, he was
what's his ceiling? What's his ceiling? What's the best you can expect? An average NBA shooting guard? An average starting NBA shooting guard?
I don't know.
Because he can't shoot.
But Mike, he was like third in the NBA in three-pointers after the All-Star break until like the last week and a half of the season.
I'm out.
Okay, I'm not out yet on him.
I'm out. I mean, he's going to be a part of it because he's young and he's still got an opportunity to develop, but I don't see it. I don't see it. I think he tops out as, at best, an average NBA starter, which for the fifth pick in the draft is not what you want. It's made up for by two home runs with Mobley and Garland, so the Okoro one doesn't hurt quite as much. But I'm not sure what his ceiling is. I think it's average NBA shooting guard. So, look, Brooklyn is not very good I think that the fact that they struggled with a Cavs team that didn't play very well and still that game was hanging in the balance with 4 minutes to go says probably more about Brooklyn than it does about the Cavs. Durant and Kyrie are obviously unbelievable. I've said it millions of times. Every time Durant shoots, I expect it to go in. And when he misses, I'm just like, what? He missed? How can that be? But the rest of their team, Bruce Brown had a nice game, played well, but I don't know if the Cavs could have made it any easier on him than what they did. Basically, they didn't even guard him, and he made them pay for that. But other teams are going to have better defenders, more high-level guys that can take advantage of them on the offensive end of the floor and punish what the Nets can't do on defense. Seth Curry clearly looks hurt and is doing nothing. Patty Mills, nobody's afraid of him in the playoffs. Claxton can throw down alley-oop dunks, but otherwise I'm not sure what he's bringing to the table.
Would you say Patty Mills' stock has gone down under?
I would say his stock has definitely gone down under.
Do you like that?
That was good. From the beginning of the year, at the beginning of the year, he was looking like one of the marquee signings of the offseason, and he's definitely dropped off and is not playing nearly as well as he was at the beginning of the season. So I think Brooklyn, look, you can't count out Kyrie and Durant because they're just so good, but I think when they face a better team, it's going to be a struggle. And to the Cavs' credit, they battled all the way to the end. I think that team has done that all year where they've gotten down, they fought back, and they did that last night. And I think that coming home, have an opportunity to play Atlanta, I'm not 100% confident that they're going to be able to beat the Hawks, but it feels like at home, you know you're going to get a good performance from Garland. I feel confident that you're going to get a good performance from Kevin Love. You just need somebody somewhere else. I said it before the game, right, that you needed my formula for the Cavs winning that game against Brooklyn was you needed to have Garland have a great game, which he did, and you needed to have somebody else on the floor have a good game. Osman, Okoro, Markkanen, none of those guys came through with what I would say was a good game. So that made it really tough for the Cavs to be able to do that. And on the Brooklyn side, Durant and Kyrie were about as good. I mean, Durant didn't get 45, but he was super efficient, gave the ball up when he was double-teamed, and Bruce Brown made the Cavs pay for doing that, and Kyrie obviously just shot the heck out of the ball and played up to the level of his talent for sure. So coming into this game on Friday against Atlanta, I think Garland's going to probably – is going to have to match basket for basket with Trae Young. He's going to have to be within shouting distance of Trae Young's scoring totals, whatever that might be. And then you're going to need Mobley to play well again. I think Love's going to have to shoot threes, and you're still going to need Okoro, LeVert, Markkanen. One of those guys is going to have one, if not multiple of those guys, is going to have a good game. And if they don't, I think it's still going to be tough. Atlanta looked good tonight. Now, I know Charlotte is not that great defensively. They're pretty bad, and they were really bad tonight. But Atlanta has some weapons. They've got some guys playing well. And Trae Young scares me when it comes down to a one-game situation. I could certainly see him having – I could easily see him going for 40 and almost single-handedly winning that game for the Hawks. So the Cavs are going to have to do a really good job on him, and they're going to need some contributions from in the scores – you know, in the scorebook from somebody besides Garland and Love.
Yep, I agree with all that. I guess it probably makes the most sense. Why don't we talk about that Atlanta game now?
Okay.
Because then we can make a prediction. I want to thank the Charlotte Hornets for their participation in the play-in tournament. I want to thank them for getting so blown out that I was able to watch the full two-hour episode of Survivor tonight, because all I had to do was have the game on in the background and just watch them get obliterated. That was their defensive effort tonight, Mike, rivaled my Stronzo Recreation basketball defense.
It fell apart real fast at the beginning of the second half.
It was starting to get there in the first half, and then they made a run at the end of the first half. And I was like, oh, this is competitive. And, you know, so I started to watch the second half, and then the next thing I know, DeAndre Hunter is just 16 points in the third quarter. They're just hitting everything. the Charlotte's not playing good on offense, but they definitely didn't play well on defense. And then the next thing, you knew it was like 27 or 25, and it was over. I mean, it was over. Game over. And so I was able to watch The Survivor tonight. It was good episode, Mike. I don't know if you caught any of it or not, but it was a good episode. So I don't think anyone really cares about Survivor, so I'm not going to talk about it anymore. But I really didn't watch the game. And I will tell you, I was pretty confident this morning that I thought the Cavs would be okay with whoever they played. I feel less confident after what Atlanta does, but maybe we can hope that they use it all in this game, and now they're coming to Cleveland and they're going to lose. But Atlanta's 3-1 against Cleveland this year. Most recently, they beat the Cavs. Now, I believe the Cavs didn't have Mobley for that game. I believe the final score was 131 to 107 or something like that, which that scares me. Like you said, Trae Young is scary, and he can go nuclear on us real quick. So, I don't really know if there's anything else you have to say about the game tonight, because that was a blowout.
Charlotte was ridiculously bad on defense.
They got blown out by Indiana last year, right? In the play-in tournament too. In the same game.
Yes.
Oh man. That's not a good look, Charlotte.
Atlanta played really well, but I think the thing that you have to hang your hat on if you're the Cavs is that Atlanta's been pretty inconsistent, although I think they won, I read, 7 out of their last 9 coming down the stretch in the regular season. But as you look back over the totality of the year, they've been up, they've been down, they've played well. The next game they've played poorly. So I think what you have to hang your hat on if you're the Cavs is that they're going to play not as well. They're going to be on the road. And the Cavs should have a good home crowd, I would have to think, that can give them some energy. And I think,
don't know. It's the same day as the Guardians home opener, Mike.
Well, I guess. I don't know how many people are going to be at the Guardians game.
It's sold out, man.
Do people even know what the Guardians are?
Hey, they've won. They're 4-2, buddy.
What?
They're
4-2. Season already started?
They're 4-2.
Is that the sport where you use a glove?
They had 3 games in a row and they hit. They had 10 runs.
I did look at the roster. I knew 3 guys. I had heard of 3 guys on the roster:
Bieber, Ramirez, and Reyes. Yep.
No, I don't. Reyes, I don't know who that is.
Franmil Reyes, he's on our team.
Brian Shaw.
Oh, that's how they brought him back. I forgot
Wasn't he with the Indians in like 99?
No, he's with the Indians Brian in Shaw. 2016. He's the guy who was on the mound when we lost, Mike.
Okay.
Good job. Way to put salt in the wound.
I knew he was on one of those teams. I thought he was on like the. I don't know. Anyway, I only knew three guys on the roster. So, but that's probably 3 more than I know on 95% of the baseball teams in Major League Baseball. So,
Roberto
anyway,
Clemente.
Enough. Yeah, there you go. Enough. All right, enough baseball talk. So, I think the Cavs, to me, the key is Garland's got to be within shouting distance of whatever Trae Young's point total is. Garland's got to be right there with him. And then you have to have one of the LeVert, Osman, Markkanen, and Okoro. One of those guys, I think, has to have 20 points, and the other ones all have to at least do something functional. And I think that's the formula for winning this game, combined with the home floor and the energy that hopefully you're going to get from the crowd. So,
does Jared Allen play on Friday, Mike?
I hope so.
When they said that he didn't have surgery, because I didn't know this. Did you hear that part of the broadcast? That the reason he didn't did you watch it on ESP or TNT, or did you watch it on?
I watched it on TNT.
Okay. They said the reason he elected to not have surgery is he didn't want screws in his hand.
All right. Well, there you go.
You don't have, like.
I mean, look, I guess you can look at it 2 ways, right? That it's a broken finger. It doesn't seem like, can it get worse? Or does he just have to manage the pain?
They said that he could do worse damage to it. Yes, that's what they were talking about. TNT people were talking about.
So if that's the case, does it make sense to try to win one game and potentially mess up the guy's hand for the rest of his career to win one game where then you're going to go into a playoffs where clearly you're not in any way, shape, or form ready to compete for an NBA title?
I don't know.
I think they could beat Miami.
I think they can be competitive with Miami. I think if Jared Allen was back and at full strength, I think that they could compete with Miami. I don't know what compete could mean a 4-0 sweep with four competitive games. It could also mean they could win two games and take it to a game six. I don't think Miami is by any means unbeatable. I don't expect the Cavs, if the Cavs get there, I don't expect the Cavs to beat Miami, but I think they can make it competitive. I just, the finger thing, it seems like he should be able to
I've said it so many times, rub some dirt on it. Listen, I know I live, that's a old age statement. I know, but come on now. Just come on.
Look, tape that thing up and just play and do the best you can. Yeah, I'd rather run Jared out. Even if all you're running him out there to do is play defense, just run him out there to play defense. If he can't catch the ball, then don't throw it to him.
Moses Brown some minutes. He didn't see the floor at all last night.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
What's the purpose of having him on a signing him to a deal if they're not going to throw him out there? That's just my opinion.
Yeah, well, I guess higher stakes game. I don't know. Maybe they didn't think he was ready. But
he would have played the season, dunked the ball.
There you go. Well, all right. So we want to predict this game.
I'm going to take the Cavs, Mike.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Cavs too, only because they're at home, and I'm a believer in what Darius Garland can be, and I think Garland's going to come up big in this game at home, and I think the Cavs. Surprisingly, I know it'll be a surprise to most people around the country. I think surprisingly, the Cavs are going to win this game at home and move on and see what they can do with the Heat.
Yep. Okay. Sounds good. All right. So then the other game last night, it wasn't quite a blowout, but Minnesota got the job done for me. So if things continue to progress, the other game is still going on, by the way. Currently, Mike, I don't know if you are watching or paying attention. It's a 9-point game. They actually have made it somewhat competitive. Between New Orleans and San Antonio, but last night's game, Minnesota beats the Clippers. I'll be completely transparent and honest with you. I fell asleep in the middle of the third quarter while sitting on my chair watching the game. I caught the highlights. I caught Patrick Beverley running around without a shirt on and throwing his jersey into the stands, and then dapping up the whole Clippers team. He was just being a little nuisance, which he is pretty much a nuisance. When he almost got Morris ejected, that was pretty awesome. When he waved to the guy, waved to him.
That was good.
And then I don't like that the refs went back and looked at that. I don't like that at all. That's tacky. I understand the reason they said, oh, I wanted to make sure. They were just trying to the guy didn't realize who he was teeing up and had forgotten that Morris had a second technical. Because if Morris didn't have one technical already, there's no way they go back to that. They just let it be, right?
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
I think that's a garbage move, in my opinion. I don't think that's the way that replay should be used, personally.
I agree with you there. I think once you set the double T there, then you just got to live with it.
Yeah, so... But I liked how, I don't remember who said it on the broadcast. Oh, it might have been Reggie Miller, which I don't like a lot of what Reggie Miller says. But Reggie Miller said something like, getting Morris ejected may actually be helpful to the Clippers.
He's going with my theory of the Morris brothers. Hey, you're never winning anything with one of those two guys on your team.
Except the Lakers won 2 years ago with the Morris brother on a team. Just remember that.
Markieff didn't play much in that series.
That's true. But listen, he still won.
And they didn't pay him much, let's put it that way.
Yep. So anyways, obviously Edwards was amazing last night. Karl Anthony Towns was terrible. Terrible. Or as Charles Barkley would say, terrible. He was god awful. But it didn't end up mattering. So I know I said I was a believer in Karl Anthony Towns on the last podcast.
And I said that Minnesota wasn't going to reach their full potential until Anthony Edwards was their best player. because
he played it like the best player last
night. That's the way that game played out last night, that Edwards was their guy.
And when Edwards wasn't in the game, though, D'Angelo Russell, I thought, played really well.
Russell played well. Did the things that he's good at. And in a way, D'Angelo Russell's kind of trick or treat because he doesn't get to the rim, so he doesn't get to the line very much. He shoots a lot of jump shots, a lot of mid-range, a lot of floaters. But when that stuff's going in, he's pretty good. And he's a much better passer, I think, than a lot of people realize. Yep. And when he's playing well, he's definitely somebody that can help you win games. He just is – because his shot profile doesn't allow him to get easy shots. I mean, he's just not getting layups and free throws. He's kind of an old school player. And so because of that, I think he hasn't always been consistent in his career. But this year, he started to sort of turn that around a little bit. And I think last night was the best of D'Angelo Russell. And if you're going to get that guy, Minnesota's going to be tough to deal with. Now, they have to get a better performance clearly from Towns, but it still comes down to me. Anthony Edwards is going to be – he has to be their best player eventually, if this team's going to be any kind of serious threat. And they're not a serious threat in this year's playoffs. I think they'll give Memphis a good run in that series. I still think Memphis wins it. But moving forward, if you're the Timberwolves, you want Anthony Edwards to be the best player on your team and Karl-Anthony Towns to be your second best player.
That sounds about right to me, Mike. But the Clippers, you know, they're going to play the winner of this game that's going on right now, which it looks like now it is going to be New Orleans. New Orleans is up 10 with like 3 minutes left. So we're going to – is there anything else you want to say about that game last night, Mike, before we move into the next part of the podcast? Or are you good?
No, I'm good. Well, do we want to predict – are we going to leave our prediction for when – New Orleans officially wins this game.
Let's wait until
okay.
We'll come back. I'm ready. So we're gonna shift to just discussing the all NBA teams, and then by the time we're done doing that, the game should be pretty much over, and we can cement it in stone. Mike, does that sound good?
Perfect. Yep.
Okay.
Perfect.
So Mike and I have been tasked with coming up with our all NBA teams. This wasn't actually as difficult as I thought it was going to be. I think my only team that was difficult was my third team. I felt pretty comfortable with my first and second team. Mike, well, we'll see. We'll have to compare notes and see if we've got some similarities and if we have differences on. So we'll start with the first team. Does that make the most sense? I think that's
sure. Go for it.
Okay, so I got Jokic and Giannis, which I'm going to guarantee are on your team.
Okay.
I have Doncic, Booker, and the third spot, I put DeRozan in there over Tatum.
All right. So I agree with you on four of the spots. I have Jokic, I have Giannis, I have Booker, and I have Luka. And I went with Durant. I know that the argument against Durant.
He didn't play enough games. There's no way he's going to be a first teamer.
I'm just telling you the argument against Durant that he didn't play enough games. When he did play, depending on how you want to rank Giannis and Durant, I mean, he's either the best player or the second best player in the world. And when he was on the floor, the Nets were good. When he was not on the floor, the Nets were bad. And I looked at my other choices, Tatum, DeRozan, no. So I went with Durant as my first team All-NBA forward, even though I know he's probably not going to get there because of the number of games played, but on my team, Kevin Durant is a first-team All-NBA guy.
Okay, that's fair. All right, so my second team, I'm going to guess our guards and our center are the same for sure.
Okay.
I have Steph and Ja and Embiid.
Yep.
Okay, I have Durant on my second team, and I have Tatum on my second team.
Okay, so all we did was flip DeRozan and
Durant.
So I felt like DeRozan started out really strong, and so did the Bulls, and then both of them tailed off slightly. DeRozan probably tailed off less than his team did, and so I feel like he's deserving of a second team. I know there's a lot of buzz for Tatum getting that first team slot, as you mentioned a minute ago, but I'm still I'm still not 100% in on Jason Tatum. I know what he's done. I know what he can do. I know he's a two-way player. I just couldn't justify, despite the change, despite the difference in the number of games played and minutes and all those things, I just think it's hard for me to look at Durant and Tatum and not have Durant on first team and Tatum on second team. So Tatum would be my – I would have Tatum with a slight edge over DeRozan. So if I was going to replace Durant in the first team, I probably would have replaced him with Tatum as opposed to DeRozan. But I get where you're going with that. So basically we have the same 10 guys.
Okay, well, that's good. All right, so let's see how the third team goes here.
Okay.
All right, my point guard, Chris Paul.
Yep, I got it.
My other guard, the guy we were kind of fearing on Friday, Trae Young.
Yes, that's what I have.
Okay. The two forwards, I have Siakam.
Yep.
You have to put LeBron in here. Sorry. LeBron has to go here. He averaged 30 points a game.
Yes. So this was probably, I think, I don't want to say it's the hardest, but once you get to this point, I'm not sure who else I'm considering at this spot, what else I'm looking at in terms of who are the other guys that I might throw in there at those forward spots. There was no compelling argument to be made for anybody besides Siakam and LeBron. And look, LeBron's Lakers record this year, ugh, and it does feel a little bit dicey to reward a guy whose team imploded the way his team did, but the fact remains that there's a little bit of legacy involved here, and you have to look at it and say, a guy putting up 30 at his age, plus the other statistics that he's putting up, it's not like he's averaging 32-2. He's also contributing in other ways, and he had the stretch at the beginning of the season where he was, when the Lakers were still competitive, was where he was playing center and doing things on defense that kind of tailed off at the end of the season. So I think you have to let LeBron onto the third team. And then Siakam, to me, has been a guy who's gotten better. He missed like the first 2 weeks of the season. And then since then, he's just slowly improved and gotten better and gotten better and gotten better, just like the Raptors. So I think rewarding Siakam for the season that he's had, for the Raptors have had, makes sense in that last forward spot.
Okay, and then the center, I put Karl Anthony Towns, Mike.
So did I.
Oh, my God. So our third team, we cannot take into account last night's game, Mike. You're not allowed to do that.
Correct. It's a regular season award.
Yeah. So
Karl Anthony Towns. So we basically agreed. We agreed on the same 15 guys with only one
swap. That's pretty impressive, Mike. We did that. We did not do any discussion beforehand, Mike. And I'm pretty impressed.
So either we're going with the consensus or we are thinking unconventionally. So how do you think it turns out? The big discussion has been Jokic and Embiid are both eligible at forward and center. They've been two of the best three guys in the league the whole year. Do people split that vote?
No, I don't think they do because they're not going to sit here and talk of who's going to vote where. And that's the problem because when you vote for them, they can only be in that spot.
Right.
So
theoretically they could miss out on being the second team center if they don't get enough vote. They could end up missing the first and second team because they split their vote between center.
Yeah, I think the NBA has got to get smarter about this personally. I don't like that. Like they need to fix that.
I mean, positions are a lot less meaningful than they used to be because everything is much more positionless than it was 20 or 30 years ago. But at the same time, I think it also reads better, looks better, makes you think about it more when you're trying to think of who are the best guys at this spot in this position. I think people understand that that's what it means. Whereas if you just had five centers on your team or five forwards, it wouldn't make as much sense. Plus, if you go back in history, it's just sort of the way that the voting's always gone, right? One year, Wilt was first team All-NBA and Russell was second team. And then another year, Russell was first team and Wilt was second team. Were those two of the five best players in the league during the time when they were playing pretty much every season? Yes. But you couldn't have them both on first team All-NBA because they were both centers. And so I think that it's sort of a nod to the history of the game to keep it this way with the positions. But if the NBA were to change it, I think it would certainly make the voting easier in terms of getting the five best seasons on the first team, because right now the way it's stacked, it's not possible.
Yep. Okay. All right. They got to figure something out. They've got to. I just personally think they have to do something. And I understand that you need to have like the sanctity of the game and everything, but things change. It's time to change some things. That's just my personal opinion on that. All right. So the game ended, Mike. The New Orleans Pelicans win the game by 10, 113-103. CJ McCollum, Brandon Ingram had great games. The other guy who had a great game, Bill Simmons' favorite player right now.
Herb Jones, baby.
Herb Jones. Did you see he got
bad yeah, I saw he got, I saw,
oh
yeah,
my
I saw,
God.
I saw
people,
he got roasted.
Come on now.
Yep. Yeah, come I don't on. Get it. But, hey, that's what Twitter's for.
Yeah, give me a break. Did you see his tweet?
His response to that?
Yeah.
I did see
congrats,
that.
Congrats, Houston Chronicle. You got a bunch of clicks.
Yep.
That's pretty good. Anyways, yep. I'm not here to litigate that. But Pelicans, clearly the better team. We predicted this, Mike. So that makes you 4-for-4 in your predictions. It makes me 3-for-4 because I was going in with rose-colored glasses in the Cavs game. So
yeah, I think you were a little off on that one.
A little bit. We were there. We had a chance. But anyways, Pelicans clearly the better team. I mean, Spurs might have had a chance if Murray didn't get three fouls in like 8 minutes in the first half. I don't know about the third foul that was called on him, but you know, and they didn't really talk about it much on the broadcast. But is this the end for Pop? That's the big thing that I'm taking away from this game. Is he retiring? I think he's got to be, right? Like, I
could be. I mean, he's what, 74,
he's
73,
73, 73. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So I got to believe that, look, he doesn't have a whole ton of years left. And it seems like now would be as good a time as any for him to walk out. But who knows? Who knows? Let's not push him out the door. If he wants to keep coaching, he can keep coaching.
Yep.
All Pelicans, right. Pelicans beat the Clippers. I'm calling
100%.
Pelicans beat the Clippers.
And they'd be far more enjoyable. Now, they're not beating Phoenix, but it'd be far more enjoyable to watch than the Clippers. I'm sorry.
Well, you know who's coming back, baby.
Cyan.
You saw his 360, right?
I sent it to you.
I know. Come on, man. He's back. He was looking a little wide.
That's what I thought.
I thought he looked a little wide. But you're that wide and you're throwing down 360s. I mean, the guy's just he's a freak of nature, and I won't be surprised if we see him.
When? On Friday?
No, we're not going to see him on Friday, but if they get to that Phoenix series, I won't be surprised if he plays at some point. And he might only play 10 minutes, but I won't be surprised if he plays.
Yeah.
He's got to add to his total, man. He's got to get to 250.
It's the Blazer Bowl on Friday, Mike.
Well,
CJ and Nance versus Norm Powell and Robert Covington.
Hey, this game, right, just cements the fact that CJ's legit.
Is he going to go down? Mike, this is a really crazy question to ask you. Maybe you know what the question's going
to
be.
Is the best player ever to make an all-star team?
No. Is he going to go down as a better player than Dame Lillard by the time his career is over?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
Absolutely not. There's no chance of that.
Okay.
Dame's been considered a top 10 player in the league for 5, 6, 7 years now. McCollum's never been considered in that.
Is he going to win more than Dame?
I mean, if Zion comes back to that team, you put a healthy Zion on this team, and that's a team I'm not sure. Let's put it this way. Offensively, good luck. Good luck dealing with that team offensively if you put Zion in the middle of it. They're still not very good defensively, but that team's going to score, and I don't know how you're going to stop them. So could he win more? Maybe. I mean, I don't know that team's a legitimate title contender next year if Zion comes back healthy. But they're certainly better than Portland for the foreseeable future. And if Dame is staying in Portland, he's not going to win anytime soon. I mean, I guess if they draft Chet, you better be ready to wait for a few years. And by that time, who knows what Lillard's status is and where he'll be and how he'll be feeling about Portland. So I don't know. I mean, Dame's a better player, but CJ is certainly in a better situation as of right now.
Yep. All right. So, Mike, I got a fun one for you, all right?
Okay.
Pelicans started 1-12 on the season. Only three other teams have gone 1-12 or 0-13.
I saw they flashed that. They flashed this graphic up during the game. So I know one of them was the Cavs.
Cavs in 84-85.
And I can't remember who the other ones were.
The Suns in 96-97.
Okay.
And the Bulls in 67-68.
Okay. Yeah, I would have never got those other ones. I would have got the Cavs one even sight unseen without the graphic. I remember that season, but I wouldn't have got the other two.
I was not alive yet, so I do not remember that season.
That was a fun season.
All right, so we both agree the Pelicans are going to win. Good.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So we're going to ride together on this one, Mike. So
let's just do this. Let's finish this up with just what's your favorite series in each conference that you're looking forward to?
That's what I was going to suggest.
Okay. So good. So we may or may not do another pod coming up this weekend, Friday, Sunday, sometime before our normal Tuesday slot, and talk a little bit more in depth about these playoff series. But we wanted to keep this one relatively short. So let's just, without even any analysis or explanation, just tell me what's your favorite series that you're looking forward to in each one of the conferences, okay. And then I'll give you mine.
I'm going to think that we're going to have the same, Mike.
Okay.
I'm going to start with the Western Conference because I think that one's more clear cut.
Okay.
I think it's Minnesota-Memphis.
Okay. That will not be my choice in the West. Go ahead.
Okay. And then in the East, Sixers-Toronto Raptors. Not because I want to watch the Sixers, but because I think the Raptors could beat them. And the fact that Matisse Thybulle can't go play in Toronto games. So all we need is Toronto to steal one in Philly, which is totally capable of them doing. I think Boston-Brooklyn was the other one that's close. Like the Bucks-Bulls series is going to be this demolition derby.
Yeah, that's going to be destruction.
And I mean, I said Miami-Cavs, if the Cavs get it, would be interesting. But I don't know. I'm going to guess that your Western Conference is going to be the Warriors-Nuggets, right?
Yes, Warriors-Nuggets. To me, that's a super interesting series because Golden State's lack of size and really having almost nothing that they can throw at Jokic, I just wonder what that looks like. Can Jokic – does he just say, hey, I got to score, and could he put up like 38 a game in this series? I think he could. And to me, there's just because of that lack of size for Golden State and how do they deal with Jokic, and then Jokic trying to figure out how to exploit the fact that they don't have anybody to guard and what that looks like. To me, that's fascinating. And then just again, where's Steph's injury? How's he feeling? How is Clay? Where's Clay at? Is Draymond able to stay healthy? I just think there's a lot of interesting subplots there. And I like watching Jokic. So to me, that series is the most interesting in the West. And then in the East, the three series other than Milwaukee and Chicago, I think all have the potential to be good, fun, interesting series. No matter whether the Cavs win, obviously Cavs Heat will have personal rooting interest in that one. So that'll make that interesting. I think if Atlanta wins against the Cavs on Friday night, Atlanta-Miami has the potential to be an interesting and competitive series. I think Boston and Brooklyn, same thing. Kyrie and Durant, I wouldn't count them out. Boston, clearly over the course of the season, has proved to be the better team. And I think defensively, they're pretty well equipped to be able to deal with the Nets. But to me, I do think that the Sixers-Raptors series is probably the most interesting, simply for the drama of what's going to happen with the Harden 76ers. And then Toronto's just played so well. The Thybulle thing throws a whole nother monkey wrench into what Philadelphia is trying to do. There's so much pressure I think, on the Sixers, whereas the Raptors are going to kind of come in playing free and loose. I expect the Raptors to win that series, in all honesty. I think it's a I think the Raptors win that series, but that's the most interesting one because I think it's probably the most closely contested. And you have the interesting subplots of in Embiid and Harden, you have two guys who have sort of checkered playoff histories, and Toronto's kind of this weirdo team with all those guys that are between 6'7 and 6'10 that run around and do all kinds of things offensively and defensively. I just think they're an interesting watch. Nick Nurse always has some kind of wrinkle up his sleeve. So if there's any coach that you'd want coaching against Philadelphia, trying to figure out how to game plan and scheme against those two guys, I think Nick Nurse would probably be the choice. So that series to me has the potential to be super interesting and have a lot of ramifications, especially if Philly loses, as to what's going to happen in terms of the landscape of the league over the next year or two. When you consider, is Philly, if they lose in the first round and Harden doesn't play well, are they really going to sign him to a 5-year, $200 million extension? Is he really going to want to come back? Does Harden want to come back? I don't know. To me, there's a lot of things that could potentially go wrong / happen were Philly to lose that series. So that's the most interesting one to me.
All right. Both of those are valid series to root for. The other ones I'm not really interested in. So
fair enough. All right, let's leave it there.
So we'll be back at some point, maybe before next Tuesday, to kind of talk about things. But if not, we will talk about...
We'll be right in the middle of the first round if we come back on Tuesday.
All the teams play games on Saturday and Sunday, and then I think six of the teams play their second games by Tuesday. So, you know...
We'll have some idea of what's going on in the series by then. If we don't jump on before that to talk a little bit more in depth to preview the first round, but we'll have to just see how our schedules allow.
How the cards fall.
That's right.
What the tea leaves say, right, Mike?
Yes, what the tea leaves say, the tea leaves will tell. Let's put it that way.
All right. Sounds good, Mike.
All right, let's leave it there. We'll skip the dad jokes this time, and we'll be back with those on Tuesday. Thanks for checking out this special NBA bonus episode this week. And who knows, maybe you'll even get another one if you're lucky or unlucky, depending on your perspective. So thanks for listening. We appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.